Today, I'm welcoming Sarah Olney back to Radio Jackie.
You're the Liberal Democrat MP for Richmond Park and North Kingston, and also the Cabinet spokesperson for the party. So welcome back to Radio Jackie. Always a pleasure to see you again.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
So shall we start on Heathrow expansion? It seems resilience and growth are being mentioned by the government as hand in hand.
Energy Secretary Ed Miliband has said, I quote, Heathrow must meet its carbon budget and carbon standards.
So do you think this is a contradiction in terms of a third runway?
Well, I absolutely do. I mean, Heathrow is already the single biggest carbon emitter in the UK. So to expand Heathrow any further would undoubtedly contribute a great deal more carbon to the atmosphere. And that's entirely inconsistent with everything the government is saying about the need to reduce carbon emissions and to get to net zero. So they're talking a lot about things like sustainable aviation fuels or electric flight and things like this. But I mean, those are very, very, you've got very narrow usage at the moment. They're not being used at the kind of scale that would make any difference at all. So a lot of that is simply not going to work in terms of making Heathrow expansion in any way compatible with carbon targets. But also, I mean, obviously the Chancellor is talking about it in terms of growth. You know, I just think that the case for growth with Heathrow is really marginal. I mean, some of the projections, and we haven't seen recent economic projections, but, you know, they range anywhere from a few extra billion to actually costing the economy a few billion. So, you know, the argument is not made. And I think, you know, I will continue to resist expansion at Heathrow.
Yeah, I've seen it range from minus 2 billion to plus 3 billion. It's a massive...
Exactly that, yes. Absolutely. Exactly, exactly. And I just think that the benefit, the economic benefits are really, really uncertain. I think there are many, many other things we could be doing to get growth into the economy. Obviously, the Liberal Democrats talk a lot about, you know, joining a customs union with the EU. And that we know that would unlock you know, lots of opportunities for growth just simply through taking out some of the massive trade barriers that have been erected thanks to the Conservatives' appalling deal with the European Union. So, you know, there are lots of things that the government could be doing if they're serious about growth. And yeah. I just don't believe that expansion at Heathrow could ever deliver that.
And going back to Heathrow, the Rachel Reeves is saying she wants to build homes. She's going to have to smash a load down if that third runway goes. She's also going to have to put a tunnel under the M25 is going to have to go through a tunnel between junctions 14 and 15. How is that economically viable?
I mean, it isn't. I mean, that's the whole point. There's lots of reasons why Heathrow expansion hasn't happened yet. And actually, the biggest reason is it's operationally extremely difficult to deliver. As you say, I think it's the entire village of Harmonsworth needs to be taken out. And that's a huge disruption, obviously, both to the people who live there, but to many people around. And, you know, what needs to happen to the M25? There's a whole incinerator that will need to be relocated. It's a huge project. It's not easy to deliver. And that's why it hasn't been done yet. And the cost of doing it. I think that Heathrow will be really constrained in their ability to raise finance to pay for it. So all of these things are going to, you know, mean massive barriers before it can actually be delivered.
Yeah. And did you see the piece about Grangemouth in Scotland being closed? It's possibly one of two of the largest producers of ethanol, which actually goes towards sustainable aviation fuel. Yet they're saying it's not viable because of the economic energy pressures and carbon pressures the government's putting on it. It's just, it is contradictory.
Exactly, exactly. It doesn't stack up.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on. Right. You recently had a meeting with South Western Rail over delays to services through Waterloo because they're training drivers for the new Arterio trains. I was at Waterloo when they introduced these wonderful trains, you know, 10 coach trains, and all the services are going to be improved. What's happened? How did your meeting go? What did they say?
Well, look, they are great trains. I've had the pleasure of travelling on them a number of times, and I do think they're a massive improvement on the old rolling stock. And I'm sure many of your listeners who are also train travellers will agree. But yes, I mean, one of the reasons why there has been a lot of delays, particularly before Christmas, it seems to be a slightly improving picture in the last month or so, is partly because drivers have had to be taken off their usual shifts to go and be trained to drive the new trains. And they don't have a huge amount of flex in the system. So if they're taking drivers out for training, as soon as somebody's off sick, then that creates real problems for them. So that has been one of the reasons for the delays. But there's lots and lots of different reasons as well. The usual things, trespasses on the track, faulty rolling stock, all of this sort of thing. So there has, and obviously we've had appalling weather, and that always has an impact on the railway system. So it's lots of different things, but it's you know, it's, I think it's an improving picture, to be fair.
That's good. That's good. Okay, you've m recently met with Sir Mott Rowley, Met Police Commissioner, and you've written a letter to Yvette Cooper concerning park policing in Richmond and Bushey Park. These parks together are about the size of Islington. What is the role of park police? Why is it so important? And what sort of issues do they police in the area? It's obviously very different from policing an urban area like Islington.
Yes, no, completely it is. And that's the whole reason why we want to see a dedicated force within the Met for policing the parks, because they've got a range of different roles. What's really, really important about the parks police is that they really understand the terrain that they're covering. So it's not like, for example, if you're reporting a crime in any part of town and be able to say it's happening on this street. You know, you really need to be able to know where people are and to be able to recognize the terrain. So that's really, really important. They obviously have a role. Quite sort of specialist sort of wildlife crime, particularly crimes against some of the wildlife in the parks, and also the particular nature of crime in the parks. It can sometimes be obviously a lot of cycle theft, but also things like moped related crime or you know, sort of antisocial behaviour in the park. So it's about knowing the terrain, about understanding the particular nature of crime and antisocial in the behaviour in the parks. And that's why we're really, really keen to ensure that we retain a dedicated parks police, because otherwise I'm concerned that the parks will have to be neighborhood teams.
Yeah.
And then the difficulty of that was it takes them away from their usual routes. Obviously, we want our neighborhood teams to be policing our neighborhoods. And so they were to be taken off those duties or needing to expand their routine to the parks. Then that would make both neighborhoods and the parks less safe. So that's why I'm really, really keen to see a continued role for the parks police.
And do you think they will continue in their current role, or do you think they're going to be
I
cut?
think it's hard to say. We've got to look at that in the context of some, you know, massive financial challenges for the Met Police. And obviously, there's no doubt they've got bigger challenges to face than policing the Royal Parks. I had a really good meeting with Sir Mark Rowley recently, and we discussed at length a lot of these challenges that they're facing. And I've been calling on the government. I was in the chamber this week calling on the government to provide that proper funding to the Metropolitan Police. There are particular challenges associated with policing in London, and that it makes it much, much harder for our local neighbourhood teams, you know, to be able to maintain the presence on the streets that we all want to see. So I really made that point to the policing minister. And I'll continue to make that point more broadly about funding for the Metropolitan Police.
And talking of funding, obviously they've been hit by the increase in employers' NI. The government says they're going to be compensated, but in a different way. Is this 1.1 billion they're promising? I think it was last Wednesday I heard on the news that we're going to promise it. Is this the compensation they're getting, or is there any more coming their way?
That's my understanding that in order to pay the increased NI contribution, that will be part of that 1.1 billion, and then there will still be an additional uplift beyond that. But there's no doubt that this national insurance hike is causing so many problems right across the public sector and our charitable sector, and it's you know, burdening a lot of organisations with a lot of extra cost, and suddenly the cost of hiring people has gone up a lot.
So they're really not getting any increase in funding at all, is it? They're probably getting a decrease in funding in the whole future.
It is still an increase, but it's less of an increase than it would have been if there hadn't been this NI cost on top. So it is still an increase, but you know what we've seen in London across the last sort of 10 to 15 years is a lot of sales of property assets, such as police stations. And Richmond Park, you know, used to have three police stations, the constituency of Richmond Park, and now it has none. And you know, it is much, much harder for people living in my constituency to feel as if they've got somewhere they can go to engage with the police. That makes people feel more unsafe, but also it breaks that link between the police and the communities that they serve, because people simply don't feel as if they know how to go and find them. They don't know where to go to report a crime or to perhaps give information about something that they've seen. And that makes everything a lot harder. And the commissioner himself acknowledged that when he spoke to me and some of my fellow Liberal Democrat MPs, that selling off these assets has made it actually much harder for the police to do their job. But selling off police stations has been a useful source of funding for the police over the last couple of decades, and now there's nothing left to sell. So that's so A, it's become much harder to police than it used to, but also they don't have that money coming in anymore.
Oh dear. So anyway, moving on, Thames Water still. Yes,
Yes.
there was an article in the FT that says Thames Water is burning through £15 million a month on lawyers and advisors. This is incredible amounts of money. And they're saying that they're going to need, for restructuring costs, more than 200 million, I think. So they're going to take out a £3 billion loan. Where are we going on that one?
I mean, myself, the Liberal Democrats have been calling for over a year now for Thames Water to be taken into special administration so that their finances can be properly sorted out and services can be guaranteed to be continued to deliver to customers. The Thames Water are the ownership that they've had over the last couple of decades has basically taken out a lot of the value for the company, and it's replaced asset with debt. And now they're really, really struggling financially. What we want to see is the operating part of Thames Water separated out from its current ownership model, so that and then restructured to make sure that that can't happen again. To put it into something called a public benefit model, to make sure that as the money comes in from customers paying for their water supply, that is all used to deliver that water supply to help Thames Water, maintain its network of pipes and uphold its environmental obligations, and that it functions properly. But I mean, we are nothing has happened over the last year or so that the Liberal Democrats have been calling for this, and now we are in this, as you say, millions of pounds being spent on lawyers, water firms in court, £3 billion worth of loans. I can't see it ending well, but there is a solution, and I think people should be looking at it seriously.
Another spanner, if you excuse the pun in the proverbial waterworks, is the government's new endeavours to fund in, to go into AI in a big way. And the AI data centres use huge amounts, or they say they're going to be using, Thames Water being quoted as saying they're going to be using huge amounts of drinking water to cool these big data centres down. I mean, there are other options, and I hopefully the government will look into them that doesn't use huge amounts of water. But Thames Water have been quoted by the government as saying it's going to cause more problems.
Yeah, that's really interesting about something. I mean, again, the government seem very, very keen on AI, part of the growth agenda, and it's really important that they make sure they've considered all of these different aspects that they are. And if they're serious about investing in infrastructure, then that's precisely the kind of infrastructure that they need to be investing in. But it is about ensuring that we've got a long-term plan for water, for electricity, for other sources of energy. Really making sure that they're clear about what's needed and they invest in that.
Yeah, I think they need to look into the logistics about not using drinking water to cool these AI centers.
Yes.
And there are, I know there are other alternatives around that the government needs to investigate instead of just saying we need the water to cool these systems.
I mean, it's not beyond our capabilities to think of new and innovative solutions to some of these issues.
Absolutely. Now, finally, you are one of 32 parliamentarians elected as a trade envoy. I went through all the other people that have been elected, Liberal Democrat. There's one Conservative and there's one a Lords member of the Northern Alliance. Are you honoured to have received this?
Well, I very much am, and I'm really looking forward to getting stuck into the role. I'm going to be trade envoy to Tunisia, Libya, and Algeria, and I'm starting with some meeting, lots of the sort of the ambassadors to those regions, finding out more about them, but. It's going to be really interesting, and it's about sort of helping to build those links between the UK and those countries, and exploring the options for trade, which will obviously be mutual benefit both to the UK and to those countries. So it's going to be a really interesting role. Very honoured to have been chosen to do it, and I'm looking forward to getting started.
Did you think you're going to clock up a few more air miles doing this?
Well. I mean, a lot of it will take place in this country, being somebody who greets delegations as they come from those countries. But I'm expecting that there might be one or two visits a year over to that region. So it'll be a good opportunity to get to know those regions better.
And it's a fascinating region, isn't it? One of maybe a little bit of
So I understand. I've got to say, I've not been selected to do the job because I've got any prior connections. So it's going to be all new for me. So it's very exciting.
So have your separate workload on your desk now for your new
Yes,
position.
well, it's Yeah, no, it'll be a bit of a juggle, but it'll all be a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, congratulations on your post. I'll let you go. Thank you
Thank
again for
you.
this afternoon.
Not
And
at all. Nice to see
thank
you.
you. Look forward to catching up with you soon. I'm sure we'll have lots more to
Yeah.
talk about. Take care, Sarah.
Oh, I'm
Thank you.
sure. All right then. Cheers. Bye bye.
I heard him say this morning, Joe must meet its carbon budget and carbon standards. So do you think this is a contradiction in terms of a third runway?
Well, I absolutely do. I mean, Heathrow is already the single biggest carbon emitter in the UK. So to expand Heathrow any further would undoubtedly contribute a great deal more carbon to the atmosphere. And that's entirely inconsistent with everything the government is saying about the need to reduce carbon emissions and to get to net zero. So they're talking a lot about things like sustainable aviation fuels or electric flight and things like this. But I mean, those are very, very, you've got very narrow usage at the moment. They're not being used at the kind of scale that would make any difference at all. So a lot of that is simply not going to work in terms of making Heathrow expansion in any way compatible with carbon targets. But also, I mean, obviously the Chancellor is talking about it in terms of growth. I just think that the case for growth with Heathrow is really marginal. I mean, some of the projections, and we haven't seen recent economic projections, but they range anywhere from a few extra billion to actually costing the economy a few billion. So, the argument is not made, and I think, I will continue to resist expansion at Heathrow.
Yeah, I've seen it range from minus 2 billion to plus 3 billion. It's a massive
Exactly that. Yes,
range.
exactly. And I just think that the benefit, the economic benefits are really, really uncertain. I think there are many, many other things we could be doing to get growth into the economy. Obviously, the Liberal Democrats talk a lot about joining a customs union with the EU, and that we know that would unlock lots of opportunities for growth just simply through taking out some of the massive trade barriers that have been erected thanks to the Conservatives' appalling deal with the European Union. So, there are lots of things that the government could be doing if they're serious about growth. And I
Yeah.
just don't believe that expansion at Heathrow could ever deliver that.
And going back to Heathrow, Rachel Reeves is saying she wants to build homes. She's going to have to smash her load down if that third runway goes through. She's also going to have to put a tunnel under the M25 is going to have to go through a tunnel between junctions 14 and 15. How is that economically viable?
I mean, it isn't. I mean, that's the whole point. There's lots of reasons why Heathrow expansion hasn't happened yet. And actually, the biggest reason is it's operationally extremely difficult to deliver. As you say, I think it's the entire village of Harmondsworth needs to be taken out. And that's a huge disruption, obviously, both to the people who live there, but to many people around. And, what needs to happen to the M25? There's a whole incinerator that will need to be relocated. It's a huge project. It's not easy to deliver. And that's why it hasn't been done yet. And the cost of doing it. I think that Heathrow will be really constrained in their ability to raise finance to pay for it. So all of these things are going to, mean massive barriers before it can actually be delivered.
Yeah. And did you see the piece about Grangemouth in Scotland being closed? It's possibly one of two of the largest producers of ethanol, which actually goes towards sustainable aviation fuel. Yet they're saying it's not viable because of the economic energy pressures and carbon pressures the government's putting on it. It is contradictory.
Exactly, exactly. It doesn't stack up.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on. Right. You recently had a meeting with South Western Rail over delays to services through Waterloo because they're training drivers for the new arterial trains. I was at Waterloo when they introduced these wonderful trains, 10 coach trains, and all the services are going to be improved. What's happened? How did your meeting go? What did they say?
Well, look, they are great trains. I've had the pleasure of travelling on them a number of times, and I do think they're a massive improvement on the old rolling stock. And I'm sure many of your listeners who are also train travellers will agree. But yes, I mean, one of the reasons why there has been a lot of delays, particularly before Christmas, it seems to be a slightly improving picture in the last month or so, is partly because drivers have had to be taken off their usual shifts to go and be trained to drive the new trains. And they don't have a huge amount of flex in the system. So if they're taking drivers out for training, as soon as somebody's off sick, then that creates real problems for them. So that has been one of the reasons for the delays. But there's lots and lots of different reasons as well. The usual things, trespassers on the track, faulty rolling stock, all of this sort of thing. So there has, and obviously we've had appalling weather, and that always has an impact on the railway system. So it's lots of different things, but it's I think it's an improving picture, to be fair.
That's good. That's good. Okay, you've m recently met with Sir Mot Rowley, Met Police Commissioner, and you've written a letter to Yvette Cooper concerning park policing in Richmond and Bushey Park. These parks together are about the size of Islington. What is the role of park police? Why is it so important? And what sort of issues do they police in the area? It's obviously very different from policing an urban area like Islington.
Yes, no, completely it is. And that's the whole reason why we want to see a dedicated force within the Met for policing the parks, because they've got a range of different roles. What's really, really important about the parks police is that they really understand the terrain that they're covering. So it's not like, for example, if you're reporting a crime in any part of town and be able to say it's happening on this street. You know, you really need to be able to know where people are and to be able to recognize the terrain. So that's really, really important. They obviously have a role. Quite sort of specialist sort of wildlife crime, particularly crimes against some of the wildlife in the parks, and also the particular nature of crime in the parks. It can sometimes be obviously a lot of cycle theft, but also things like moped related crime or you know, sort of antisocial behaviour in the park. So it's about knowing the terrain, about understanding the particular nature of crime and antisocial in the behaviour in the parks. And that's why we're really, really keen to ensure that we retain a dedicated parks police, because otherwise I'm concerned that the parks will have to be neighborhood teams. And then the difficulty with that is it takes them away from their usual routes. Obviously, we want our neighborhood teams to be policing our neighborhoods. And so they were to be taken off those duties or needing to expand their routine to the parks. Then that would make both neighborhoods and the parks less safe. So that's why I'm really, really keen to see a continued role for the parks police.
And do you think they will continue in their current role, or do you think they're going to be
I
cut?
think it's hard to say. We've got to look at that in the context of some, you know, massive financial challenges for the Met Police. And obviously, there's no doubt they've got bigger challenges to face than policing the Royal Parks. I had a really good meeting with Sir Mark Rowley recently, and we discussed at length a lot of these challenges that they're facing. And I've been calling on the government. I was in the chamber this week calling on the government to provide that proper funding to the Metropolitan Police. There are particular challenges associated with policing in London, and that it makes it much, much harder for our local neighbourhood teams, you know, to be able to maintain the presence on the streets that we all want to see. So I really made that point to the policing minister. And I'll continue to make that point more broadly about funding for the Metropolitan Police.
And talking of funding, obviously they've been hit by the increase in employers' NI. The government says they're going to be compensated, but in a different way. Is this 1.1 billion they're promising? I think it was last Wednesday I heard on the news that we're going to promise it. Is this the compensation they're getting, or is there any more coming their way?
That's my understanding that in order to pay the increased NI contribution, that will be part of that 1.1 billion, and then there will still be an additional uplift beyond that. But there's no doubt that this national insurance hike is causing so many problems right across the public sector and our charitable sector, and it's you know, burdening a lot of organisations with a lot of extra cost, and suddenly the cost of hiring people has gone up a lot.
So they're really not getting any increase in funding at all, is it? They're probably getting a decrease in funding in the whole future.
It is still an increase, but it's less of an increase than it would have been if there hadn't been this NI cost on top. So it is still an increase, but you know what we've seen in London across the last sort of 10 to 15 years is a lot of sales of property assets, such as police stations. And Richmond Park, you know, used to have three police stations, the constituency of Richmond Park, and now it has none. And you know, it is much, much harder for people living in my constituency to feel as if they've got somewhere they can go to engage with the police. That makes people feel more unsafe, but also it breaks that link between the police and the communities that they serve, because people simply don't feel as if they know how to go and find them. They don't know where to go to report a crime or to perhaps give information about something that they've seen. And that makes it everything a lot harder. And the commissioner himself acknowledged that when he spoke to me and some of my fellow Liberal Democrat MPs, that selling off these assets has made it actually much harder for the police to do their job. But selling off police stations has been a useful source of funding for the police over the last couple of decades, and now there's nothing left to sell. So A, it's become much harder to police than it used to, but also they don't have that money coming in anymore.
Oh dear. So anyway, moving on, Thames Water still. Yes,
Yes.
there was an article in the FT that says Thames Water is burning through £15 million a month on lawyers and advisors. This is incredible amounts of money. And they're saying that they're going to need for restructuring costs more than 200 million, I think. So they're going to take out a £3 billion loan. Where are we going on that one?
I mean, myself, the Liberal Democrats have been calling for over a year now for Thames Water to be taken into special administration so that their finances can be properly sorted out and services can be guaranteed to be continued to deliver to customers. The Thames Water are the ownership that they've had over the last couple of decades has basically taken out a lot of the value for the company, and it's replaced asset with debt. And now they're really, really struggling financially. What we want to see is the operating part of Thames Water separated out from its current ownership model, so that and then restructured to make sure that that can't happen again. To put it into something called a public benefit model to make sure that as the money comes in from customers paying for their water supply, that is all used to deliver that water supply to help Thames Water, maintain its network of pipes and uphold its environmental obligations, and that it functions properly. But I mean, nothing has happened over the last year or so that the Liberal Democrats have been calling for this, and now we are in this, as you say, millions of pounds being spent on lawyers, water firms in court, £3 billion worth of loans. I can't see it ending well, but there is a solution, and I think people should be looking at it seriously.
Another spanner, if you excuse the pun, in the proverbial waterworks is the government's new endeavours to fund in, to go into AI in a big way. And the AI data centres use huge amounts, or they say they're going to be using, Thames Water being quoted as saying they're going to be using huge amounts of drinking water to cool these big data centres down. I mean, there are other options, and I hopefully the government will look into them that doesn't use huge amounts of water. But Thames Water have been quoted by the government as saying it's going to cause more problems.
Yeah, that's really interesting about something. I mean, again, the government's been very, very keen on AI, part of the growth agenda, and it's really important that they make sure they've considered all of these different aspects that they are. And if they're serious about investing in infrastructure, then that's precisely the kind of infrastructure that they need to be investing in. But it is about ensuring that we've got a long-term plan for water, for electricity, for other sources of energy, really making sure that they're clear about what's needed and they invest in that.
Yeah, I think they need to look into the logistics about not using drinking water to cool these AI
Yes.
centers. And there are, I know there are other alternatives around that the government needs to investigate instead of just saying we need the water to cool these systems.
I mean, it's not beyond our capabilities to think of new and innovative solutions to some of these issues.
Absolutely. Now, finally, you are one of 32 parliamentarians elected as a trade envoy. I went through all the other people that have been elected, Liberal Democrat. There's one Conservative and there's one a Lords member of the Northern Alliance. Are you honoured to have received this?
Well, I very much am, and I'm really looking forward to getting stuck into the role. I'm going to be trade envoy to Tunisia, Libya, and Algeria, and I'm starting with sort of meeting, lots of the sort of the ambassadors to those regions, finding out more about them. But it's going to be really interesting, and it's about sort of helping to build those links between the UK and those countries, and exploring the options for trade. Which will obviously be mutual benefit both to the UK and to those countries. So it's going to be a really interesting role. Very honoured to have been chosen to do it, and I'm looking forward to getting started.
Did you think you're going to clock up a few more air miles doing this?
Well, I mean, a lot of it will take place in this country, being somebody who greets delegations as they come from those countries. But I'm expecting that there might be one or two visits a year over to that region, so it'll be a good opportunity to get to know those regions better.
And it's a fascinating region, isn't it? One of maybe a little bit of
So I
conflict.
understand. I've got to say, I've not been selected to do the job because I've got any prior connections. So it's going to be all new for me. So it's
So have your separate workload on your desk now for your new
very exciting. Yes.
business.
Well, it's. Yeah, no, it'll be a bit of a juggle, but it'll all be a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, congratulations on your post. I'll let you go. Thank you
Thank
again for
you.
this afternoon.
Not
And
at all. Nice to see you.
thank you. Look forward to catching up with you soon. I'm sure we'll have lots more to
Yeah.
talk about. Take care, Sarah.
Oh, I'm sure. All right then. Cheers. Bye bye.